We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovics. Joining me today again is Andy Scheckman, CEO of Miles Franklin. Thanks for joining me today, Andy.
It's super great to be here, Tom. I'm a big fan of what you're doing and always happy to jump on board.
Thanks very much. So, Andy, why don't we start about talking, about what you've seen for demand. I know you've been basically working 18 plus hours a day here for the last basically year, but why don't you contrast with us the demand you've seen over the last year with the demand you've also seen over the last 2 months here, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, demand, Tom, is off the charts. It is an expansion of interest and recognition into the mainstream. One of the things that I've talked about a lot, really, over the last year or two has been kind of a progression of demand and what it looked like going all the way back 40 years to 1980, the last time we saw gold at $800 and the Dow Jones at 800, where they crossed a one-to-one relationship on the Dow and gold, last time we saw that. 41 years ago in 1980. And back then, most people didn't want stocks or equities. They preferred gold coins and silver dollars. And in that environment, if we look at the allocation of metals to the public in 1980, all the way from, you know, Joe Sixpack, all the way up to the Harvard Endowment Fund, it was an 8% allocation to precious metals across the whole gambit of U.S. investments. And as we progressed to 2020, right before COVID started, that number had whittled down all the way to 0.5%. So for literally my entire career, which started in 1989 to 2020, the average allocation to precious metals was less than 1%, culminating at the end of 2020, or the end of 2019 rather, in with 0.5%. Very small amount of people owning any gold or silver at all. The average, the mean over that 40-year pyramid period is 2.5%. And if we look at what we've seen since 2020, February, since COVID started, which, I mean, I would have told you for sure that 2020, that we'd never see anything like it again. February, March, April were extraordinary. And that's when, you know, we were doing a year's worth of business in 6 months. We've already done a year's worth of business in 3 months this year. We've done well over $100 million in sales in the first 3 months of the year. In 2012 through 2019, that was pretty darn close to a whole year's worth of business. We are seeing a regression to the mean. We are seeing a regression to that 2.5% portfolio allocation. But think about that. I mean, 2.5% is nothing. And that yet is a fivefold increase in anything this industry and myself has experienced in 40 years. What happens if it's a 5% allocation or a 10% allocation? A 10% allocation doesn't sound like much. You know, a lot of people will say, well, what should I have, 5 or 10% of my assets in gold? And that's a common phrase I hear all the time. What happens if everyone owned 10%? Now you're talking about a massive increase, a 20-fold increase in demand. The recency bias would suggest that this industry can't handle it. And what we're seeing right now is you look at all the companies that are online, you see nothing but out of stock, contact me. And the mints that are struggling to keep up with demand as more and more people are waking up to what's going on with fiat currencies. And so I guess I would say to you simply this, I never thought demand would better 2020, and it's doubled it by at least or bettered it by at least a double right now. And so is it going to continue to get worse? Does demand ease up a bit? I'd like to believe no, it won't, because we're just seeing a greater expansion by you know, by mainstream, by people who have never owned precious metals before. And maybe it has something to do with the Reddit group. Maybe it has something to do with alternative media sites like yourself. Maybe it has something to do with cryptocurrencies. Whatever it is, the recognition that that you have to do something to safeguard your money outside of what was considered traditional forever, it's permeating, and that is having a major effect. So I don't know how else to put it to you other than to say it doesn't stop. It's a blessing. It truly is a blessing. But we are working 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. I've just hired 4 new brokers. I've hired 3 new operation staff, and that's just to keep up. So like I said, it's a blessing. No one should feel sorry for us, but it's exhausting, and it's unlike anything that I have ever been prepared for in 30 years in this industry.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I'd like to talk a little bit about the premiums that we've seen. Obviously, when demand goes up, we see premiums over spot really start to go a lot higher. So can you kind of explain to us why those premiums get so high? Is it simply dealers getting greedy, or, you know, where those premiums really go to?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that question, because it's not the dealers getting greedy. So you have to understand, in the ecosystem, there are 5, maybe 6 primary distributors in the United States and in Canada. Let's call it in North America. And these primary distributors deal directly with all the major sovereign mints and the refineries. These primary distributors are very, very well funded. They have contracts with all of the major mints. To give you an example, I am one of 27 authorized U.S. mint resellers in the world, one of only 27. The difference between an authorized reseller and an authorized participant, the main players in the industry, the 5 or 6, is about $50 million or more, you know, typically per mint, they're allocating $25 to $50 million to each one of these mints on a guaranteed allocation basis, where they're going to take whatever it is that they give them. But let's take a look at the landscape for a moment. First, let's go back to what I was saying earlier. You're seeing a regression to the mean, where more and more people are becoming interested in precious metals, number one. Number two, through COVID and social distancing and all of these things, on top of more interest, we've seen a mitigated and limited output coming from the mints. And so the mints are struggling to keep up with demand. You hear about what's happening in Perth. You hear about it in the UK mint. The US and the Canadian mint have both been incredibly inefficient all year long. In fact, the US mint went on an allocation basis in gold, eagles, and buffaloes in the second week in January. I've never seen that in 31 years. The Canadian mint getting 2021 gold eagles is like pulling teeth. It's next to impossible. So all of these mints are struggling with supply. So imagine you're one of the 5 or 6 primary distributors, and you got you're really the center for all of the supply, and you're also the center for all of the demand. All of us retailers go directly to the primary distributors to buy product. Well, they have so much demand coming from all around the world, not just North America, all around the world, and mints that are incredibly inefficient and are not delivering. So these primary distributors who have gone through a horrendous 9-year bear market prior to COVID, where they weren't selling anything really. I mean, they were, but premiums were super low and they were giving things away for a long time. Now go into the opposite environment, where they're trying their hardest just to get product, can't find any with any regularity, and everyone is trying to buy from them. And so it's starting up at the very top. Basically, there's such little supply and so much demand, and these primary distributors don't know where their lunch is coming from next. Where are they going to get product from? I'll give you another example, and this is why prices rise. I mean, I had a call today from my operations, and they said, listen, you know, we have a bunch of stuff coming next week, but we don't know what it is yet. We haven't been told from the primary distributor, that one of the ones out east that we deal with in New York City. And they said, the truck will be loaded up on Monday, but I don't have a... I don't have a manifest of what we're getting yet. So it's a situation where it's these primary distributors are wondering how long they're going to continue to get supply in this environment as more and more people are asking for it. So you have wicked demand with a fractured supply, and primary distributors who, you know, big operations, big money, big operations, not sure what tomorrow brings. So is it justified for them to make a little bit more? I do believe it is. I mean, this is an industry that has given stuff away most of my career, where if you make 1%, it's a lot in this industry. We're not making appreciably more money than we ever did before, but we are paying more money to buy this stuff. Another example, in order to get, I bought 75,000 kangaroos from the Perth Mint in February for delivery in April. I had to pay upfront 3 months in advance at the biggest premiums I've ever paid for ever in my entire career. You know, north of $250,000 I had to pay, and that premium cost, I can't hedge. If I buy 75,000 ounces of silver, I can hedge it on COMEX, so I have no market risk to the fluctuations of the silver price, but that premium, I can't. What if all of a sudden the U.S. Mint goes full bore and says, we're dropping all of our prices, the primary distributors drop all their prices, and now the market's flooded with silver eagles, and I have 75,000 kangaroos that I just paid over $3, $3.50 premium, $4 premium for above spot, and what do I do now? I'm stuck with it. I'm going to lose money. So it goes both ways. The dealers like myself aren't greedy. In order to have product to sell, not only do we have to buy it months in advance, pay up 100% upfront, and pay the highest premiums that are not hedgeable ever that we've ever paid. So it's just a situation really of the big market makers saying, you know what? I don't know what tomorrow brings. We need to make our nut, and it filters on down to us. So it's also important to realize, and the one thing that people don't talk about in this equation is, well, what about the bid side? You know, on the bid side, the majority of what you're paying over the price of silver, you're going to recapture, or gold, when you sell it. Our bid prices are the highest they've ever been right now, ever. I mean, right now I'm paying 5% over spot to buy a gold eagle. I've never sold them that high in the past 15 years. So, you know, it goes both ways, Tom. And the only thing of it is that in the first 3 months of the year where we've done well north of 100, if we did 1 million in buybacks, 1%, I'd eat my hat. No one's selling us anything. So it's easy to focus on the high premiums when the only thing you see are people buying. But for those that want to sell us, call me. I'm happy to take your stuff and I'll pay huge premiums. You're not just getting spot. You'll get big premiums, more so than I've ever paid anyone in 30 years.
And that's simply a function of the fact that you can't really get any supply, right?
Well, that's just it. So if you realize that the secondary market is pretty much turned off, now all you have are 2021s and stuff, new stuff from the refineries, the bars and rounds. So if the mints, which have been the model of inefficiency, aren't delivering and the public isn't selling, well, what do you expect the primary distributors to do? They have to make their money somehow or they go out of business, and that doesn't do any of us any good. So then there is no market maker. There is no line of supply directly to the mints. And so it's a situation where they don't know what tomorrow may bring. And that's right. There's way more demand and not enough supply, and virtually none in the form of secondary market selling. In 2017, when gold was in the middle of a bear market and a protracted one, and Bitcoin took off, 6 or 7 out of every 10 sales we were doing were people selling. And that was when the primary distributors were having to buy gold eagles, let's say, from the U.S. Mint at 3.25% in millions and millions and millions of dollars worth. But yet I could buy all day long gold eagles that were backdated for 1% and sell them to the public for 2%. So the primary distributors were losing 1.5% on every gold eagle they were buying that were brand new. Same thing would have been with the Maple Leaf and any of them. So it goes both ways. And back then, no one was saying to me, well, why are you selling gold eagles for under the price of what brand new ones are for? Well, that's because the primary distributors were getting screwed. And now They're making money because they don't know what tomorrow may bring. Back then in 2017, we didn't know if gold was ever going to catch a bid ever again. Is this the end of the gold run? Is it are the millennials moving to cryptocurrencies and away from gold? And, you know, on and on and on. The thought you could go down that rabbit hole and wonder, is this the end of it? And you know what? The Reddit phenomenon has given me a whole new it's renewed my optimism, because these young people are very smart. They are very coordinated, and they've done a hell of a job in bringing to focus that not only are precious metals wealth, in particular silver, but that there's some funky stuff going on the COMEX and with the commercial banks and with the central banks, and they've alerted people. And so, you know, look, I think that the knife cuts both ways. And as far as high premiums, goes both ways. And quite frankly, if I had a gun to my head, I will tell you that I think they're going to keep going higher. The mints cannot keep up, and there just isn't enough metal out there, period, to suffice a much, much wider group of people. And again, right now, we're probably not even at 2% allocation. I say to you again, what happens if it goes to 10? I mean, there'll be nothing left overnight. And that's how fast it happens. You have six primary mints, Tom: US, Canada, Austria, Australia, South Africa, United Kingdom. Mexico just said they're not sending out any more, the Libertads, the silver Libertads. They're not sending any more out. So you cross the Mexican mint off, and the Chinese mint is, they don't send hardly anything out. They don't amount to anything. Those six mints, when they shut down or there's a problem, you're going to feel the reverberations across the entire landscape. And they've been horribly inefficient. And now you see puffs of smoke coming up from every single one of them about issues that are happening, whether it be UK, whether it be Perth. You know, there have been a few that have been all right. South Africa has been good. The UK has been okay, but now there's puffs of smoke coming up there too. So the US and Canada have been horrible. So, you know, this is a situation where there just isn't enough supply.
And that's exactly something that I wanted to touch on next with you, Andy, is let's talk about the differences between these mints. We've seen, you know, obviously with John Adams raising the issues that the Perth Mint is having delivering any type of product, but can we really apply the same let's say lens of inefficiency or lack of supply to all of the other mints? I know the U.S. Mint is supposed to be shutting down for what was called retooling later this year. So kind of walk us through, if you can, the differences between those mints and where you think their situations are different.
Well, the big problem with the Perth Mint has to do mostly with their unallocated synthetic program. And John Adams has been talking an awful lot about this. And I have to admit, although I have no proof, I'm seeing supporting emails from his claim left and right all day long. I'm getting emails from people saying this is the case. For the Perth Mint, first of all, let me say this. As far as physical supply for Miles Franklin, for the past 2 years, the Perth Mint has been a godsend. And I would be lying if I said otherwise. And I bought over 150,000 kangaroos since the beginning of the year, and I've gotten most of them silver. And last year they were the same thing. Last year when this was happening, Shea Russell, who works for Agora in Australia, was telling me this was happening there in gold. She was saying to me, no one can get gold, but I'm saying, well, Shea, I'm getting 2020 gold kangaroos. Well, no one in Perth can, she said. And that was being echoed all over the place. And then all of a sudden, Perth delivers tons of gold to the COMEX. Back last year when the COMEX was running into problems and the price on COMEX was disjointed from the price on the London Metal Exchange, and they were running into problems with supply where they had to actually take 400-ounce gold bars from London and move it over to COMEX and say, well, if you want to take delivery, you get a piece of a 400-ounce gold bar. These are all real bad things, right? Because This is all about rehypothecation. There weren't enough 100-ounce bars there to suffice all of the people that potentially wanted to take delivery. So they had to go to the LBMA and say, LBME and say, hey, send me your 400-ounce gold bars and we'll do fractional allocation. Well, anyways, Shea was saying this was happening back then. And what we're seeing right now is the same thing. But let's bear in mind that the Perth Mint program is free storage if it's unallocated. Free storage. Now, I've run a storage program for a long time with Brinks, and there ain't nothing for free. There's nothing for free. What it basically says is that when times are great and you don't need to get your product quickly, an unallocated free program probably will work just fine. But when things get like this, an unallocated program is not so great. And basically what we're seeing out of Perth is that people are going to Perth and saying, I want to move to allocation. Well, in order to do that, you first have to fabricate, which means you have to, because the gold and silver held at Perth is in working condition. It could be a doré bar just came in from a mine. It could be a giant spool of gold or silver that they cut into planchets. Could be a kangaroo or anything in between, or a 1,000-ounce bar, whatever. People are saying left and right that they're being told months and months and months. We're seeing the same thing at Kitco right now, by the way. We've heard rumors of this, not in unallocated, but in not being able to get refined product very easily in the UK, Canada. If we look at getting 2021 gold maple leaves, it's been incredibly hard. They're producing them, but nowhere near what they used to. These are things that we would never see in the first quarter, maybe the last quarter. The US Mint has been the absolute model of inefficiency as well. Gold Eagles, Gold Buffaloes were rationed starting week 2 January. You never see that. Silver Eagles, 2021s. If I sell them to the public right now at $9.79, I will be cheaper than anyone in the United States. That's $6.50 higher than I've ever sold them for on average, really, in 30 years. So, and that's, I have to pay well north of $8 to buy the stuff from the primary distributors. So, you know, when you talk about, what's the difference? The first difference is in allocated and unallocated accounts. I guess my warning to everyone would be get the hell out of unallocated accounts. You know, stop being penny wise and pound foolish. This is dumb already, and you can see it. If you want to own gold, pay to have it stored or store it yourself. There's nothing for free in life, and there are ramifications for thinking otherwise. And if you want to leave it in an unallocated program where storage is for free, then you should accept the consequences when the rubber meets the road, like we're seeing right now, where people are told, well, you can get it, but it's going to be 6, 8, 9 months before you get it. Is that really what you want to hear? No, it's not. And that's why in the 30 plus years that I've done this, I've met 3 people that are allocated at Perth. Everyone else is unallocated. Their allocated program starts at like 1%. Their expensive storage costs, that would put it higher than any storage facility in North America. So people choose the unallocated certificate. And, you know, here again, when no one is buying it the way that they are voraciously or trying to fabricate all at once, then it's fine. But the minute that happens, you can see how dangerous that becomes. And so first and foremost, anyone who has unallocated programs should switch. And that would be the same thing with GLD and SLV. You know, any paper derivative synthetic program, you should own the real thing. And I think you're seeing people wake up to this. John Adams, the Reddit group, they're all waking people up to this. And you're seeing that. You're seeing them call and say, hey, I want my stuff. Well, since that's happened, Tom, I've had over a dozen emails, at least people validating what Mr. Adams is saying, that this is true. This is what I've been told. So while I have no proof, I can tell you that where there's smoke, there's often fire. And there's an awful lot of smoke coming up under Kitco and under Perth right now, less at the UK. But Canada and the US, while not doing anything nefarious, they're just horribly inefficient. As far as the retooling comment with the US Mint, I talked about this. I have, as I mentioned, I'm one of only 27 authorized US Mint resellers. I know lots of people in this circle. And I was told on several occasions that was going to happen. I got lots of crap for this on one particular YouTube channel. People accused me of talking my book, trying to talk up demand, which I'd like to say first and foremost is a whole bunch of crap. It has nothing to do with anything. The people that I'm talking to about this still believe it's going to happen. And whether they publicly come out and admit that they're going to shut down, I'll tell you, getting product out of the U.S. Mint, it's like, I don't know. I can't even explain how difficult it is. It's not easy. And it's not straightforward. And if you told me that they were going to shut down to change the dyes and to prepare for the new enhanced counterfeiting measure that is going into the new Eagles, let alone the new design, I'd believe it. Even though the Mint has come out and said, we're not going to do this, the people that I talk to that know better say, that's not true. Is it going to happen? Don't know. But if you shut off the U.S. Mint, even for a few weeks, it's going to create a major problem with supply because the Canadian Mint isn't much better and they're not shut down. And if you shut down or compromise the two major supply chains in North America, you will feel reverberation. And here again, if it weren't for the Perth Mint in Australia getting me as much product as they had this year, it would have been really difficult. One of the reasons that Miles Franklin has been able to stay on top of this, Tom, I've been doing this for 31 years, and we know a lot of people. We don't just work with one or two of the big distributors. We work with all of them. We don't just work with one or two sovereign mints. We work with all of them. We have a network of small dealers and coin shops around North America that is deep and rich. And in this industry, it's still kind of who you know and your reputation, kind of like eBay. In eBay, if you never screw anyone, you have a good rating. If you screw someone, no one ever wants to work with you again or buy from you or sell to you. And the same thing is true in this industry. And as I mentioned with Perth, in order to get 75,000 coins, I had to pay 3 months in advance, stare into the abyss, pay 3 months in advance, the highest premium ever at you know, and pay up front for a huge, huge amount of product that I'm not going to get for 90 plus days. And you know, here, these are the things you have to do in 2021 to have supply. And if you don't do that, you're out of supply because the public's not selling you any.
Andy, I'd like to move a little bit to kind of get your thoughts. Of course, you mentioned the Wall Street Silver Group, and you know, they've done a great job getting attention to this space and exposing, let's say, a new generation of precious metals investors and people that just really want to secure their wealth for whatever is going to be coming in the near future here. But you know, I've had a lot of different discussions, let's say, since the beginning of the year, focused on people trying to, let's say, break the COMEX. So what are your thoughts towards people, you know, trying to stack, let's say, 1 ounce coins, smaller denomination retail product, or, you know, really trying to go after the bigger bars by buying PSLV with whatever they can so that those 1,000 ounce bars are taken out of the market? What are your thoughts towards that?
I think going after the COMEX is a foolhardy endeavor. I think it's not going to happen. Trying to beat up on a hedge fund that was short GameStop and AMC movie theater is one thing with, you know, 50, 70, 80, 100,000 investors that are all coordinated. But going after a bullion bank and a COMEX is another. First of all, just blanketly, the COMEX will change the rules like they did to the Hunt brothers. They'll wickedly raise margins, or they'll just make it illegal to take possession or to be long over a certain number of contracts. It's not the way to do it. You start at the bottom. And, you know, here again, PSLV, the theory that people have on PSLV is my same theory, but you don't have to stop or start at the top. Instead, if everyone were just to start draining, like we're seeing right now anyway, a greater expansion. Remember I said 2.5% was the average, 8% was the high in 1980. What if we get to 10 or 15 or 20% of allocation? Or let's just change it. Instead of people having 20% of their assets, what if just 20% of the people have some silver? I mean, right now it's minuscule, 1% or whatever. So if everyone were just to start taking possession of coins and bars little by little, looking at it as wealth, not as an investment, It's been wealth for 6,000 years. It's the way I look at it. You and I were talking offline. I told you that for 31 years, I've bought something every 2 weeks. I have never missed a 2 week period ever in 31 years. That was my promise to my father when I was 19 years old, when he and I started the company together. It was the only rule. He said to me, there's one rule or I'll fire you. I said, well, heck, I can deal with one rule. What's the one rule? He says, you'll buy something every 2 weeks. And I'll tell you, it's the greatest gift my father's ever given me, ever. He's never given me anything but an opportunity and some really good advice. And that was it. And he's been retired for a long time. He's not going to fire me anymore, but I will honor my promise till the day I die. And I will buy something every 2 weeks. And I hope that I never need to use an ounce of it. And if I do, not just for an emergency, but for an opportunity, I'm damn glad I have it. If not, my kids get it. But, you know, I think that, I don't know how this is all going to play out, Tom, but I just think that, I think that everyone should start small and buy a couple ounces whenever you can. Get on a allocation program, buy a couple ounces every week. But don't try to go and take on the COMEX. It's not going to win. What happens is, my theory being, is that if everyone drains all the physical supply across the globe, you're seeing it already with the mints running into problem. If everyone were to convert their unallocated synthetic programs into allocated physical product, number one, and number two, just buy physical as often as you can. Yes, it helps Miles Franklin. I'm not talking my book. I'm just simply saying this is how it's going to happen. If there's no physical supply anywhere, it's got to spill over into COMEX. Now you have legitimate refining needs, legitimate minting needs. And if the COMEX is, we have no silver to sell you, refinery, you can't make your rounds or bars. And sorry, U.S. Mint, we have no silver to sell you. And well, the mints aren't, you know, delivering anything right now, that supply is so tight, you're out of, doesn't the price just have to rise automatically? If there is no supply anywhere, doesn't the price have to rise? Which leads me to something I'd like to talk about, Tom, because I think it's important to realize, I think this is happening in a different light. You know, one of the things that I talked about with you probably twice, I'm guessing, because I've talked about it a lot in 2020, was the rise of this third group of reportables on the COMEX that has been draining the COMEX market. You know, typically it's the commercial banks and the hedge funds, the called specs that you see on the commitment of trader report. And as one goes long, the other goes short. They're the ones that you see positioning on COMEX. What is a family office? I mean, a family office is a hedge fund basically with less regulation. It's a smaller hedge fund maybe, but it doesn't have the regulations that a hedge fund does. So a lot of hedge funds became family offices. Here again, you have some of the wealthiest private investors in the world and sovereign wealth funds that comprise this new reportable class called the others. And typically we would see 1% drained off the COMEX in terms of contracts that were issued, not much. Now we're seeing as much taken off in a month as we see in a year. On the April gold contract, just in the first 2 days of the April gold contract, I think we saw somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 contracts taken off of COMEX. That's over 2 million ounces in the first 2 days in gold. In silver in March, we saw somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 or 55,000. 55,000. Let's see if I can remember this right. I want to say 55 million ounces of silver, 55 million ounces of silver drained off of the COMEX, backdoored out of exchange for physical and just taking delivery on the April contract. In fact, I think the exchange for physical was north of 30 million. So between the exchange for physical, trading contracts on COMEX to the London Metals Exchange, and just taking delivery of the silver contracts, just those two alone, we were north of 80 million ounces. There was over 90 million ounces taken out of SLV over the last month by the big authorized participants. And so when you put it all together, you see metal coming out of India. You see it coming off the Shanghai Gold Exchange. You see it coming out of the London Metal Exchange. You see it coming off, backdooring out of SLV. You see it now for a whole year plus coming out of COMEX by taking large deliveries And now what you're seeing, which is really illuminating, is metal being pulled out of the building. And that's what didn't happen last year. And I would often think, why are they taking these huge deliveries but not taking possession of it? And I think those are the industrials that first and foremost aren't paying as close of attention the way that we are to what's going on. The conspiratorial side, if you will, whether it's true or not, I don't think they were. And maybe they are now because we saw 30 plus million ounces leave the building here last month. That's unusual. Now they're actually taking it and walking with it. Before, they were taking delivery of it. And even though they were leaving it in the building, it belonged to those entities, was no longer part of what could be played with on COMEX. But the term rehypothecation is coming into play. And I think these people are getting a little nervous. So whether it be Elon Musk taking possession of those 30 million ounces of silver, or Panasonic, or Sony, or Samsung, or Apple, all of these needs for silver are extraordinary. So you're seeing this on the highest level and have been for over a year. I go back to 2017 and we've talked about the central banks repatriating all of their gold. And you know, if you go back to 2017 and see a linear progression, starting with all of the central banks repatriating their gold, the first one being the German Bundesbank and most of the European central banks pulling their gold back from the Bank of England and the New York Fed, that started everything. Then you see the others taking all the metal off of COMEX, and now they're pulling it off the exchange. So you're seeing the most well-funded and informed traders on the planet, both private and the central banks and commercial banks. They're all doing the same thing. They're front-running this deal. So, you know, do what they do. We can't do it on the same level, but you just buy what you can. And instead of being unallocated, do what these big players are doing. What are they doing? They are taking possession. They are moving counterparty risk. They are going allocated. Instead of it being in a pooled form, they are taking delivery, which means it's now mine. And the term rehypothecation, then you can throw out the window. So to me, the big money is doing this. Now they're able to do it on a higher level. But for you and I and everyone else out there, if it's 2 ounces, so be it. If everyone takes 2 ounces across the globe, there'll be nothing left ever for anyone else. And that is why, that is how you win. You don't start at the top. You start at the bottom and bleed the shelves empty of supply so that all of the dealers, all of the refineries, all of the mints, they have to go to the COMEX because there's nowhere else to get it, or directly to the mines, but they're not going to do it. So you go to the COMEX and the COMEX says, sorry, guys, there's no silver. Doesn't the price just have to rise then? Isn't that what supply and demand is? Because right now they've done a hell of a job at making price discovery next to impossible. And that's the key. They're really good at hiding the truth through things like rehypothecation, through things like synthetic programs. Give me one more example. How do they keep the price where it is? Well, February 1st and 2nd, Tom, we had more demand than we've ever seen, ever. That was right when Reddit hit. And that was when you had hundreds of millions of ounces going into SLV, more than it's ever gone into it in a two-day period, ever. On that Friday night, I think it was the 1st, all the big online companies shut down. And people were calling me left and right. Do you see JM Bullion shut down? You see Admex is shut down? You see this? You see this? And I would say, yes, I see it. And it looks like they would say that it looks like they're all out of product, that they don't have anything. And it did appear that way. And in some cases, it was that way. But let me just explain what that really meant and the significance of all this, trying to tie it all together. The market's open 24/7. Except on Friday night here in Minnesota, it closes at around 4:30 or 5 o'clock Central Time and opens back up at 5 o'clock Central Time Sunday. That's the only time it sleeps for that 48 hours. And on a Friday night, you know, all of our inventory is hedged. But on a Friday night, we do business over the weekend. So we will go long into the weekend. Typically, my trader will ask me how many contracts should I buy on COMEX to go long, so that we can support any business done over the weekend. That Friday night, he called me and said, what should we do? I'm thinking 55,000 ounces. I'll buy 11 contracts. So he goes on COMEX, buys 11 5,000 ounce futures contracts to support any business that we would do over the weekend. That'd be a lot of silver to sell, 55,000 ounces. You know, so I said, fine, that should be good. By Saturday morning, we had sold 90,000 ounces. He called me and he said, do you realize you're 35,000 ounces naked exposed into the open? And oh, by the way, all of our competition is shut down for the same reason. It wasn't because they were out of product. They may have had, you know, less product than they ever have, but it's because they didn't want to sell more product over the weekend unhedged with the possibility of it opening, gapping up much higher. People were talking about it gapping up 10 bucks that Sunday. It opened up a buck or two, then quick jump to four, cost us $42,000. We had to hedge it immediately, but we had sold 90,000 ounces. We're only 55,000 hedged. To cover those other 35,000 ounces, we had to do it at over a dollar loss. That's the risk you pay. But so I digress. Anyways, this is the environment that we saw back then. All the online companies shut down because of demand. We sell 90,000 ounces from close on Friday at 5 o'clock till Saturday morning. In 8-10 hours, we sell 90,000 ounces. Could have sold more, but we slept and we're not online. So in that environment, one would suspect that there's wicked demand, not just for physical, but the ETFs too. You know, the Reddit group going nuts and silver pops up to 30 bucks. So what happens Sunday night, Monday morning, as it goes from London and leaves London, goes to the United States, there's a little window, the access market there where it's really not open, but it's still tradable, but it's not in any given location. It's moving east or westward towards New York. In that environment, someone dumps 1.5 billion ounces of silver in the access market before the open. In the greatest bull market environment I've ever seen in 3 decades. So in that example, what happened was the price of silver dropped immediately by $3. That's 2 years worth of global mine supply. I mean, at 30 bucks an ounce times 1.5 billion, do the math, that's $45 billion worth of silver. A, who the hell has that? And B, why would they do it that way? Any trader in real life would be fired, prosecuted, and then shot, lined up against the wall and shot. For doing that, you're guaranteeing the worst possible execution. There's not any professional trader on the planet that wouldn't laugh at that and say, holy shit, what was this guy thinking? Well, it was done as a drive-by shooting to freak out all the Reddit people, to freak out all the new people on board. And it worked. It drove the price down, freaked out a lot of people, and we're still clawing back from that. But remember I said that you saw 90 million ounces backdoored out of SLV. Think about that for a second. On that Friday night, you had over 100 million go into SLV, the biggest I'd ever seen. And then they, at high prices, approaching 30. Then the cartel, Goldman Sachs, you know, you got this Jeffrey Curry saying the shorts are the ETFs. Well, they drive the price down in a very orchestrated event in broad daylight, so they don't even care anymore that it's ridiculous. And then what do they do over the preceding few weeks? Backdoor 90 million ounces out of SLV. They're the only ones who can, the authorized participants, at subsidized prices. They sell it up here, and then they drive it down by 3-4 bucks and pull it all out again. So they basically sold them at high prices and pulled it all out at $3 to $4 less, 90 million ounces. They covered the majority of what they shorted. They screwed everyone and covered, drove the price down and covered, and got all of that silver basically at $3 less or more than they sold it to the public for in SLV. So when you talk about concerted effort to keep the price down, it's never been stronger. The big banks are freaking out. They're afraid. And that's why the way to beat them is just by getting rid of all of the silver, because you know, you can see what the big money is doing. They're taking possession of it. They're pulling it out of the exchanges, and the cartel, the people that are shorting the price for a reason, not just for the hell of it, their efforts are not having the same effect that they used to. They have to expend more energy, spend more money, $45 billion to short a market. And it's not having as much effect because the physical demand is off the chart. And I would submit that whether it's the big money draining the COMEX and the ETFs and the London Metals Exchange and all of the big exchanges, or us on the street draining the coffers of 1 ounce coins, in the end, it has the same result. If there is no silver for the public, price will go higher. You cannot be thrown off the bull by price. The price is a tool of misdirection. They are misdirecting the hell out of the public by knocking the price down. But the fundamentals behind it, they are as skewed or more skewed than the stock market in the U.S. is with an economy that's been eviscerated. Stock market at all-time highs, yet, you know, the economy is hanging on by a thread in many cases. It's the tail wagging the dog. Same thing here. So I know I'm kind of being long-winded here, Tom, but I'm trying to draw an analogy, and it's just simply that the biggest money in the world is doing what you're asking. They're doing it at the top, but we can't do that. We will end up getting stopped out, or they'll change the rules. We start by taking all the silver we can find, and everyone who's got a synthetic program, GLD, SLV, pooled program with Kitco, pooled program with Perth, any of these pooled unallocated programs, get the hell out of them and go to allocated, go to physical, take the real thing, and you'll see real quick how that will affect really the greater landscape.
That's a wonderful point, Andy, is really trying to watch what the big players are doing and have that inform, you know, what your steps are, watching them make the moves before, let's say, the general public really catches on to it, right?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what always happens. And, you know, the little guy on the street never wins because they make their move after it has been identified already. It's to be a lone wolf and to make a move based upon your gut and your intuition when everyone else is doing something other than that. They laugh at you for doing these things. It's a lonely existence, but that's why so few people ever succeed in investing. And the herd mentality is not a friend of investing. Actually, you're supposed to do what the herd isn't doing. You're supposed to buy low and sell high. And when the herd is buying, you sell. When the herd is selling, you buy. That's how truly successful investors like Rick Rule made their fortunes. And that is the way to do it. You do opposite what the herd is doing. And in this case, you know, even though we're seeing a massive expansion into the mainstream, we're still the pimple on the elephant. Even if we're at 1 or 1.5 or 2%, that means, you know, 98 or 99% of the public still think you're a fool for doing what you're doing. Well, so be it. I guess we'll see in the end. But yeah, that is the way to do it. And that is the way to win.
Andy, something you and I have talked about in the past is the Basel III regulations that are coming into effect, supposed to be coming into this summer here. So there has been some confusion as of late, and I thought you had a great way of explaining it, and I'd like to get your viewpoint on that.
Yeah, you know, Andrew McGuire got beat up pretty badly, and it wasn't right. I think the gentleman who called him out on it really... it wasn't cool, in my opinion. Andrew McGuire has done a wonderful job in researching and talked about the reclassification of gold as a tier one asset. Well, and that's just because the IMF is, or not the IMF, the in Basel, the Bank for International, so yeah, Bank of International Settlements, BIS, they did a real poor job of classifying it. And even though gold is an asset, technically it's not called a tier one asset. It is a tier one reserve. So big deal. So instead of calling it an asset, it's a reserve. In essence, what has happened, it's the same exact thing. They have levied gold to a tier one status, the highest possible status, on par with cash. It has never been that. It's always been a tier three reserve, where only 50% was calculated on the balance sheet, not 100%. It is a tier one reserve. So, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because to me, it's the most significant event of my career. You go back to 2017 and you see the German Bundesbank repatriate their gold from the New York Fed. And it was uncharacteristic and out of the blue. And then shortly thereafter, the Bank of the Dutch National Bank, the Bank of Hungary, the Bank of Austria, the Bank of Turkey, the Bank of Poland, they all started bringing back their gold. And then the following year, the IMF reclassified gold as a tier one reserve, okay, instead of a tier one asset. It's semantics. It's the exact same thing. And there was one YouTuber, I don't remember his name, but he called Andrew out on this. And I've been talking about it. I was guilty of it too. In fact, I just saw Mike Maloney, who is as smart as anyone in this industry as an economist, called it a tier one asset 2 nights ago on one of his videos. So semantics, asset, reserve, doesn't matter. The tier one status on par with cash. So you see all the big banks pull their metal home, front run it, because in 2017 they were net sellers of gold. So they're pulling their metal home while they're net sellers. It didn't make sense. 2018, all of a sudden they do a flip-flop. All of the central banks bought more gold as a group than they did in the 60 years previously combined. Think about that. 60 years worth of metals purchases they did in 1 year as a group. 2019, those numbers were up 90%. And then you saw the reclassification of gold as a tier one reserve after almost 18 months of front running by the central banks and repatriating by the central banks. And then, of course, we see last year, 2020, the IMF asked for a new Bretton Woods, which is what anointed the dollar world reserve. So you have the central banks repatriating their gold. You have the IMF calling it as good as cash. You have the or the BIS calling it as good as cash. You have the IMF saying we want a new Bretton Woods. That's 190 countries from around the world. You have the others, the sovereign wealth funds, which probably are the people who know the people making the rules, and the family offices, which are in essence hedge funds, very, very wealthy people who are private investors who create this environment. Huge money all doing the same thing, repatriating metal off of the exchanges, buying it and repatriating it. And that's highly unusual because we never saw that before on COMEX. And, you know, last year there was over 300 million ounces taken off of COMEX by this group. You put it all together, the only confusion coming out of the Basel III reclassification is that it's not an asset, it's a reserve. But it is an asset, but the semantics of it, they call it a reserve. So it's the same thing altogether, just a different wording. But the point to take away from it is you have the most influential, well-funded, well-informed traders on the globe who front ran a decision and then reclassified as good as cash. So, you know, what does that say to you? And then all of their private cohorts are draining the COMEX and the LBMA and draining all of the centers and pulling it off of the ETFs and taking it off the Shanghai Exchange. So all pulling metal away. They're all doing the same thing all around the globe after it was reclassified as tier one. So it's a fair point. The actual term was wrong. Wasn't an asset, but a reserve. But in the end, it's the exact same thing. It was levied up to the same level as cash and doesn't get any higher than that. So from a standpoint of what it means to the central banks, it just simply means that it is levied to a whole new level. And to me, it tells me that it will be part of whatever comes next. There's no reason to repatriate, to bring it home, to accumulate, to front run, to do it so quietly, if not for it to be very vital about what is coming next. And that's why I say, don't listen to what they're saying. Look at what they're doing. And you can see it very clearly if you take a step back, whether it be the commercial or central banks, or whether it be the sovereign wealth funds and family offices, they're all doing the same thing, Tom. And I think that is what, you know, realizing that these things don't happen overnight, will wake up and it will happen overnight, but they will have spent 2, 3, 4, 5 years repositioning themselves in a very covert manner. And I think that is what is happening. The most successful investors in the world are repositioning and they're de-dollarizing and they're front running the rest of us. And we'll all wake up one morning and say, oh my God, there's no gold and silver to be found. Oh my God, look at how high the price has gone. Oh, did you see they just reclassified? There's a new digital dollar and it's pegged to gold, or a new digital Chinese yuan and it's pegged to gold. And one other point I'd like to raise, and I don't mean to jump all over the place, but since I just said the digital yuan, you know, not enough people. I saw George Gammon talking about it. Not enough. Not enough people are. You have this whole new Chinese Belt, Road, and Rail initiative that is now underway. This portrays very poorly for the dollar and very big for silver. You have 65% of the world's population, almost 70, between Asia and Africa. This new infrastructure project is the most ambitious in the history of the world. It's connecting 45% of GDP, connecting almost 70% of the world's population between Asia and Africa. And it doesn't just do so with roads and maritime channels and bridges, and it does so digitally also. And so the need for silver is extraordinary, not just in the Green New Deal for Biden and the Tesla batteries and the iPhones, but you're talking the biggest infrastructure project in human history, which needs to be connected digitally. But not only that, you have all of this infrastructure, these contracts that are connecting 7 out of 10 people in the world that are being done so and settled outside the dollar on a Chinese digital yuan. You have 70% of the populace of the world moving away from the dollar little by little and being anointed into or indoctrinated into a new system, that being a Chinese digital yuan. What does that say for the future of the dollar? What does that say for the price of silver? Could that be why all these people are front running? Do the central banks know what's coming before the rest of us and reposition accordingly? And I'd say, hell yeah, they do. So maybe this is why JP Morgan came out a few years ago, their private wealth group, and said, we want all of our depositors, and they work with the wealthiest people in the world, the centimillionaires and the billionaires. We want you all to mitigate exposure to the dollar through foreign currencies and precious metals, because we believe the dollar will be challenged for singular world reserve status, singular. And when you see 65 to 70% of the world now settling contracts on this new program in a Chinese digital yuan and not in dollars, I would say to you, this is the beginning of the end for the dollar. These are the reasons why you do what you do independent of price. You see the handwriting on the wall, and that's what the big money is doing in a very private manner. They don't want to be crowded out of trade, and they're doing this while the rest of us are being misdirected into a Dow Jones at over 30,000 when the fundamentals behind it do not support that. So anyways, I think it's going to get interesting, Tom, and all of these pieces that we talk about all go together. And it's just simply all of these pieces to me signal the wealthiest, most influential players on the planet are de-dollarizing ahead of the rest of us. And we'll wake up one morning to a new reality and it'll be too late. And that's, you can see it in how difficult it is to get product and all of these synthetic programs blowing up. It's just the very beginning of what I think is going to be a scary time, a transitional time, and one where the big money is transitioning before the rest of us have an opportunity to do it ourselves.
Well, that's a very great point, Andy. And you know, I'm very grateful for guests like you that can help all of us put those pieces together and give us that perspective to really see what's coming and see how those big players are positioning themselves and take clues from that. One of the last questions I'd like to ask you, Andy, is to get your thoughts on having platinum as an investment. Do you try to look at the platinum to gold ratio or take any time to try and put some platinum coins away once in a while?
Yeah, the platinum to gold ratio is almost as convincing as the silver to gold ratio. Platinum also has a pretty big concentrated short position by the commercial banks the way silver does. It's an interesting argument. You know, I mean, you look, platinum is always ahead of gold in like memberships to a gym. You get the gold membership, the silver membership, or the platinum membership. Same thing is true in like a Delta Airlines. It's silver, gold, platinum, diamond. Platinum is always higher, yet, you know, most of the last 50 years, it's been higher than gold. It's 30, 40, 50 times more rare than gold. It is undervalued as can be. But it's not wealth. It's not money. I take it back. It is wealth, but it's not money. It doesn't have the rich monetary history that gold and silver do. So for me, when I think about preservation of wealth, I think of gold and silver. I do own some platinum. It's a very tertiary amount, maybe 5%, 10% of my actual holdings. The mints have done a horrible job at producing them. I do have decent supply of it right now, actually. We have Eagles, we have Kangaroos, we have Philharmonics, we have some silver or some platinum bars. Not a lot, but we do have some. Premiums are relatively high. Yeah, I think people should own it based upon the math of it, and ultimately it should go much higher. But to me, Tom, there is no investment like silver. Platinum, similar to it in its demand feature in the respect that I can't think of another asset like silver that A, is wickedly undervalued. You could say platinum is, especially in its relation to gold. But one that has massive demand bracketing each side of it, both monetarily and industrially. Now, you could say, well, platinum is used in industry in catalytic converters for diesel fuel. But, you know, how much longer are diesel trucks going to be on the road? I don't know. I mean, it seems like we're moving away from that. Dieselgate certainly put a hamper on the demand for diesel engines at Volkswagen. But, you know, yeah, I think the argument is there. But for me, when I think of preservation of capital, I look to gold and silver and not as much to platinum. And I understand where you're going with it. But silver to me has it is massively undervalued. So is platinum. But it has way more demand from history of being monetary wealth. It's the people's wealth, you know, where you can afford it. It's not expensive, but by the same token, it has a massive expansion in industry, and it's found in nature in a form called epithermal, very close to the surface. The big deposits were found a long time ago. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Keith Neumeyer. He's a heck of an interview. If you haven't, you should. And I did an interview with him not too long ago, and he said to me, Andy, it's coming out of the ground at 8-to-1. That is silver globally, 8-to-1. And if it's coming out of the ground at 8-to-1, but priced at 70-to-1. And at the time I did the interview, it was 80-to-1. I said, how long do you think it can stay this way, Keith? And he said, well, Andy, you tell me. How long can we mine it at 80-to-1 and sell it or mine it at 8-to-1 and sell it at 80-to-1? You can't. It has to regress to its natural mean. And so platinum doesn't have this type of fundamental where you have a depleted asset, massive demand that is expanding, and on both sides. Now, platinum does have some industrial demand. It does have some monetary demand. It is much more rare than gold. It has similar characteristics to silver. But for my money, no, I think that it would go silver, then gold, and then platinum on a very, very small mitigated exposure to my portfolio anyway.
Excellent. Yeah, that was just something I wanted to touch on simply because it doesn't get a lot of coverage. And, you know, it's good to kind of think about a different metal once in a while here and there.
I like it. I do like it, Tom. And I get why you'd say the question. So if you know, someone wants to add a little bit to it, I have no problem. The argument is convincing. But I just think that silver is the opportunity of a generation. Yeah. I don't think gold is. I don't think platinum is. I think they're both great and everyone should own it. But truthfully, I think silver is a pathway into getting more gold and ultimately more platinum. When that ratio snaps, you'll end up being able to switch into gold or platinum, I think, and get a whole lot more for your dollar because silver is just wickedly undervalued.
Yep. Andy, any final thoughts as we wrap up here?
You know, I guess the only thing I would simply say, there are two little buzzwords or phrases that I use, and I mean them. Number one is trust your gut. And number two is, I think you trust your gut first and foremost. That's certainly number one. Buy the dips, trust your gut, and don't look at price as anything other than a tool of misdirection. The big money is using price to throw everyone off the trail, Tom. And I think that's why you have to trust your gut. Buy on the dips, set up an allocation program, and look at it as wealth. It's not an investment. Look at it as wealth that you hope you never need to use. If you do, you're damn glad you have it. If not, give it to your children or your grandchildren or your nieces or your nephews or a church or a charity, whatever. But these are very, very frightening times with what's happening to the U.S. dollar. It's being destroyed right out from underneath us at the lowest interest rates in human history. Heaven forbid interest rates rise, we're in big trouble. And some people think they will. I don't think they will. Ultimately, they have to. But if we do, if interest rates rise above 3%, we're going to be paying more on the interest on the debt than we take in all of our tax revenues combined. We are 100% insolvent. And that is why we want to do what the big money is doing, Tom, by mitigating exposure to the dollar, by de-dollarizing, by adding pure wealth to our portfolios and doing so as often as we can, not as an investment, but as wealth. And so when I say trust your gut, I mean it because the big money is going to make it difficult. And they're going to keep trying to knock us off the bull. They're going to hit the price counterintuitively. Look at it as wealth, not as an investment. The biggest money in the world is positioning into it, so it has a bright future.
Andy, excellent info as always. I really appreciate your time and you sharing all your thoughts with us. Share with our audience where we can find more about you and about Miles Franklin, please.
MilesFranklin.com is our website. Just a couple seconds on that and I'll let you run. We are building a new website that will have some online capability. We have, for the past 13 months, sold silver, I believe, less expensive than any major retailer in the United States. I've made a concerted effort on that. If your listeners would like to send us an email and put Palisades Radio or Gold Radio, Palisades Gold Radio in the subject line, I personally will make sure they get the lowest price in North America on silver. We can have that sent to info at Miles Franklin, info at milesfranklin.com. And we will email you back. We do things old school. We've never had a customer complaint in 31 years. We have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. We're one of only 27 U.S. mint retailers, but we're licensed and bonded in a federally non-regulated industry. That's really where we separate ourselves from our peers. We have, I guess you could say we're held to a higher standard. The licensing and bonding in Minnesota is the only state in America whereby you have to be licensed and bonded, and therefore almost 100% of my peers throughout the industry have boycotted Minnesota. They won't sell into the state, or they would have to be licensed and bonded. The bonding and licensing and continuing education alone makes everyone say, forget it. I guess it is kind of a pain as a business owner, but it does hold us to a much higher standard and makes in an industry that isn't regulated, makes doing business with us the safest. So on top of being the safest, for the inconvenience at this point of doing things old school. And I, for one, believe that precious metals belong old school. I believe precious metals belong offline. When you talk about privacy in a world of decreasing privacy, having a little bit of it isn't a bad thing. Give us a call. We have 12 brokers, just hired some more. Myself and the other 12 guys and gals will speak with you. We'll answer your questions. They are all well-versed in economics, in global affairs, in geopolitical affairs, what's happening. And we'll make sure you get the best price in the country too. And it'll be the safest transaction. So send that email to info at Miles Franklin, either put your name, Tom, in the Bodrovic in the subject line or Palisades Gold Radio in the subject line. And we will personally make sure you get the best price on silver and gold in North America, just out of great appreciation for what you're doing and being able to be just a very small part of it.
Thank you very much, Andy, for extending that offer to our listeners and all of your kind words towards our show. We couldn't do it without guys like you and all the other great guests that I get to speak with on here. Andy, thanks so much for your time today.
You stay well, Tom, and I'll look forward to hopefully circling back with you somewhere down the road, and always just a phone call away if anything crazy happens. And then in this world, it's since 2020, nothing has been more crystallizing than crazy things seem to happen all the time. So always just a phone call away should you need me. But thanks for having me, Tom.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andy. This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.